went to people and we drew them out, and we tapped not just their anger and their frustration with what this regime is doing, but we tapped into their aspirations, into the kind of world that we want to see. So we're going to go from having built that core to calling for and carrying out massive demonstrations on the date of Bush's State of the Union speech in January. The date hasn't been set yet, but when he calls his State of the Union speech, we're going to start mobilizing, and we're going to politically drown him out and call him out for the liar and the murderer and the homophobe and the racist that he is. And that's our plan.
Okay. What more is planned here locally today?
Oh, today, for the rest of the day, people are going to be going out throughout the city. We're going to be getting out flyers. We're going to be continuing to try and draw people into this movement and making it a reality, you know, and continuing to. Hey. Some friends of mine. You know, people are going to go throughout the city. We're going to be trying to continue to draw people in throughout the day. And then tonight, we're just going to celebrate. We're going to kick back. We're going to enjoy each other's company at 8 o'clock tonight at a place called The Scene on South Elm. People are going to be watching a night of anti-Bush movies, 30-second short films that were put together by local filmmakers across the nation, people who wanted to express something, their feelings about some aspect of the Bush regime. This was part of a campaign by MoveOn.org a couple of years ago to put together a 30-second segment that was going to be aired during the Super Bowl. Only one of those got aired, but we've got a whole bunch of them that were put in the running.
Okay.
That's going to be happening also at 8 o'clock tonight at Linden Street Artworks. There's going to be a concert called Rock Against the Regime with the hardcore band called Giant, an acoustic thrash folk band called Boxcar Bertha, and another anti-imperialist hardcore band that I actually happen to be in called Crimson Spectre.
Shameless plug.
That's okay. We got a new CD out of Magic Bullet Records.
I hear you. Okay, well, so tell me something about... another question I had was, how long have you been involved in the progressive movement here in Greensboro? And give me a snapshot of what the progressive movement in Greensboro is like.
Well, I love Greensboro. It's a wonderful kind of place because it really doesn't take very long before you get to know everybody. There's a lot of respect for each other, amongst like different kinds of people with different ideologies, different faiths. You know, we're still able to mobilize, and I think that you saw a part of that today. You know, all kinds of people that came out to support this movement have taken things to a new level. I've been involved in a number of different things, from opposing racism in the school system, in the fight against police brutality, in the anti-war movement, in defense of immigrants, and, you know, it's just a really great community. And,
a lot of our listeners nationwide think of North Carolina as being a fairly backward, we're in the South.
Yeah.
So, I just really wanted to, paint that picture because I think people don't realize that there are a lot of progressives down here who are fighting against this regime just as hard and just as vehemently and just as passionately as New York.
That's true.
Seattle, as Portland.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for your time.
Yeah, sure, okay? Absolutely, man. Thanks a lot.
That was my friend Scott Trent. We're both doing the fantastic World Can't Wait movement for this past Wednesday, and we're staying involved, and we're going to be meeting again, and we're really going to try to make that effort come out this week here in Greensboro. Next up, I have an interview with Mason Tavert, who is the executive director of Safer, which is Safer Alternatives for Enjoyable Recreation. And I'm sure that there are a number of you, or quite possibly, maybe, you know, myself I don't, but I'm sure that there are many of you out there that partake of the 420 thing. So hopefully you'll enjoy this. Here it is. Here's Mason Tvert, an interview I did with him this past Friday. All right, I'm on the line with Mason Tvert in Denver, Colorado, and Mason is the executive director of Safer, which is Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing good, man. I'm doing pretty well.
I bet you are, like, just covered up in interviews left and right, huh?
Yeah, it's been a busy time, but that's a good thing, getting the word out.
Okay. Tell me, all right, first of all, you know, I had some questions regarding the entire situation of what's going on there, but primarily I wanted to know what kind of got you motivated into even pushing for this initiative.
Well, you know, it just was a matter of time. I mean, this is a law and a series of laws that are just, you know, well past due that we repeal them. I mean, there have just been so many problems associated with marijuana prohibition that it came to a point where not only are we having problems associated with prohibition, but we're having problems associated with selectively prohibiting marijuana and allowing the use of alcohol. And it's really pushing people towards using a more dangerous drug. And, you know, while we definitely respect people's choice to use alcohol, we do think it's a pretty poor public policy to prevent a rational adult from making the safer choice to use marijuana instead.
Now, I noticed on your website, which is at saferchoice.org, by the way, I noticed on your website that the first initiative that you pushed through was on the college campuses of Colorado University in Boulder, is that right? Or
CU Boulder and CSU.
Okay. What tell me about that effort and tell me how that worked out. I mean, what sort of things did you do?
Yeah. We started our organization back in January in response to the alcohol overdose deaths occurring on our college campuses. And although alcohol use in college has always been a problem, it was becoming a huge problem out in Colorado and all over the country, where we had kids drinking themselves to death, and such a needless tragedy, and other serious problems. You know, many college campus problems like date rape, sexual assault and fighting, violent crime, all these things are alcohol related. And yet we have policies at our campuses that push students towards using alcohol instead of marijuana, when marijuana is actually far more safer to use for both the user and society. And, this goes back to a personal experience of mine. I mean, when I was in college, I was, investigated for supposedly using marijuana. Nothing ever came of it. But, I had all levels of the government, the federal, local, and state police, worrying about me potentially using marijuana when I had friends who were drinking themselves to the point where they were going to the hospital or getting in car accidents or getting in fights and damaging property. And it really made me think about where our priorities are here in this country. And I think it really goes to show the hypocrisy in a system that allows people to use a more harmful substance and prohibits them from using a safer one.
What kind of opposition did you face? I mean, this is in Colorado. This is Coors country, correct?
Well, the only opposition we had came, unfortunately, from our elected officials. I mean, there was a couple city council members who were very vocally opposed. Some of them have quieted down a little bit, but some are still as bold and obnoxious as usual. And then our mayor, who is generally a pretty progressive guy, supposedly, but he opposes this despite the fact that he owns a bar where they sell alcohol and he makes money off of it. And he has not explained why he's opposed. It's really quite astonishing. So there was organized opposition, and just like there's always going to be organized opposition when it comes to making marijuana legal, and that organized opposition is called the government.
Okay, so when you were in Boulder and you were organizing the first initiative there, how did you enlist people to help to help out without them going,
It wasn't hard. I mean, we found a number of students and a number of folks all over the state who are interested in repealing these ridiculous laws, like millions of people across the state, and obviously quite a few people in Denver. So we put out notices to these kids. We flyered, we handed stuff out, and we got contacted by many of them. And we helped them pass an initiative that would really make a difference. And so far, the schools have refused to implement these policy changes, but we are lobbying them and continuing to point out their foibles and pushing these kids towards drinking. And we generally say, you know, that the next time an alcohol-related tragedy occurs and the school refuses to acknowledge that if that student used marijuana, it wouldn't have occurred, the school is actually guilty of gross negligence.
Wow. And that's pretty strong language to present to the school administrator. I'm sure that...
Well, you know, it's like when the government, or like let's say when a company knows that a drug is killing someone, like, you know, for example, Vioxx, and then all these people get harmed by it, and someone's responsible, well, you know, you got to go and look at the people who approved the drug for use. And right now, our government and these school administrations are approving the use of alcohol on campuses and prohibiting the use of a far safer alternative. And, you know, that just doesn't make sense to me, and it obviously doesn't make sense to many people around this country.
Well, I would agree with you also. Without, like, giving, you know, totally overloading us with statistics, can you give us a snapshot of, you know, the kinds of alcohol versus marijuana usage in, you know, deaths or auto accidents or anything like that that would that
what the numbers are?
Sure. Sure.
What were you looking for? The numbers?
Yeah. I'd love to hear some. You know, I know there's.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, according to the American Medical Association, 85,000 people a year die from alcohol-related causes, and I mean, you know, 16,000 of those are auto accidents, but the rest of them are generally, you know, liver disease, people drinking, overdose, alcohol overdose poisoning for about 1,000. We got people who drink and then fall off balconies. You know, just ridiculous accidents and crimes of violence that occur that could be prevented if we'd have maybe told these people the truth about alcohol and marijuana rather than pushing them towards one simply because some powerful people in our country make money from it. And, you know, some other numbers that we could throw out there, I mean, especially in Denver, this is a city that has the highest alcohol, one of the highest alcohol consumption rates in the country. It has a higher than average alcohol-related hospital visit rate, a higher than average alcohol-related death rate, and a higher than average crime rate. And I think it's pretty obvious what the problem is here. And I can tell you one thing, it's not marijuana. I think we have some serious problems to address, and we should stop spending all of our time and all of our money and all of our life worrying about adults who make the responsible choice to use marijuana instead of alcohol.
I couldn't say it any better than you're saying it. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you also is in regards to what, you know, how did you come up with the idea of the equalization, the marijuana alcohol or alcohol marijuana equalization initiative? What was the impetus
tying the two together? There have obviously been efforts for quite some time with great groups like NORML and MPP and the Drug Policy Alliance and so on that have been trying to repeal these ridiculous laws for years. I've even worked for some of them. And what it came down to is these are all great arguments. I mean, every argument against marijuana prohibition is generally a valid one. I mean, whether it's criminal justice or civil rights and liberties or religion, the economy, environment, whatever, they're all great issues. But the fact is, right now, people don't believe in them. And we need to open their eyes. And what we're trying to do, if we're trying to get to a point where marijuana is not only legal but taxed and regulated and available legally, we need to not just convince people to pass a law. We need to get these people to believe a certain way so that they want to pass the law. And that's what we did. I mean, we related to a number of people who never use marijuana. And, you know, people who never use marijuana or never have, they are only know what they've heard. And generally, they've heard that marijuana is an addictive, deadly drug, which is obviously a lie. And we need to inform them that it's actually less toxic, less addictive, and less harmful to both the user and society than alcohol, yet we know alcohol prohibition doesn't work. So clearly this doesn't work, and it's no surprise that if you look at a timeline, the two big spikes in violent crime and homicides in this country came in the 20s and 30s with prohibition, and in the 80s with the heightening of the war on drugs by the Reagan administration.
Sure.
And it's about time that we take the crime out of drugs, and we, if people need treatment, we put them in treatment. But obviously, no marijuana-only user requires treatment simply for using something that's less harmful and less deadly than they could buy in a grocery store.
Sure. And this was an interview that I had last Friday with Mason Tavert of Safer Alternative for, I keep on getting this wrong, for enjoyable recreation. Out of Denver, Colorado, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered.
You are listening to All Things Reconsidered, the weekly radio program that brings you alternative perspectives on the events of the day.
Now, broadcasting live from an undisclosed location for reasons of downright impunity. The man who brings you the other side of the news, Bruce Birch. All right, yeah. Okay, I had to throw that one in there just because I thought that was kind of cool. This is Bruce Birch. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered, and you can reach us online, allthingsreconsidered.org. Also, you can send us email, allthings@thetruthis.us. We're going to go ahead and play the second part of this Mason Tvert interview. You know, he had some wonderful points in the first part, which, you know, dealt with health and also dealt with some of the decriminalization stuff. And now we're going to get into some other items that he wanted to discuss. And here's the second part. So tell me, all right. Let's address some of the most common misperceptions about marijuana. I know one of them is that marijuana is supposedly a gateway drug.
Yeah. You know, that's obviously the only argument our opponents have made against the actual merits of this, which they really have not made very often, is the gateway theory, which has been debunked thoroughly. The most recent, in 2004, by a RAND-funded study that took place at the University of California and the University of Amsterdam. And, you know, obviously Amsterdam has more liberal drug laws. Marijuana is overlooked and legal. And in San Francisco, it's clearly not. But there's obviously a great deal of usage there. And what the study showed is that there is even higher rates of other drug use in San Francisco. And, you know, that's because marijuana is illegal. And when marijuana is illegal, we do have a gateway effect. We force otherwise law-abiding citizens through the gateway of an illegal market. And, you know, for example, in Amsterdam, if you want marijuana, you go and you buy marijuana. You're not faced with other drugs. Well, in San Francisco, you go to buy marijuana and you're in an illegal marketplace where there are other illegal drugs and you might get them. So that's the real gateway effect. I mean, why not have people go buy their marijuana like they buy their liquor? I mean, if you walk into a liquor store, you can't buy cocaine. You can only buy liquor. Well, why not have a marijuana store? And, you know, the other gateway effect is a mental, a psychiatric one, in that we are really conditioning people to mistrust the information they hear about drugs in general. And that comes from all these lies and advertising campaigns, propaganda from the federal government. They spend $1 billion a year on it. And what they do is they tell people that marijuana is a horrible, deadly thing when it's really not. So when people try it, and we know they do, 40% of the country's tried it, they find that they've been lied to. Well, why would someone who's been lied to about marijuana listen to the government when it comes to methamphetamine? Or why would they listen to their parents when it comes to alcohol? It's really quite astonishing. I mean, when you have dishonest policies, you foster mistrust. And all we're seeking is an honest policy based on the facts. And if you notice, you never see a commercial for methamphetamine. You only see it for marijuana because of the so-called gateway theory. And it's quite interesting because clearly more people choose to use marijuana than any other illegal drug. And it's really it's kept illegal by the same people who make money off of alcohol. I mean, Republican congressional members receive more money from the National Beer Wholesalers Association than any other contributor in the world. I mean, that's saying more than gas, more than big oil, more than pharmaceutical companies. The National Beer Wholesalers Association gives more money, and that is not a beer group. That is the beer, wine, and liquor lobby, and they give more money to the Republican Red Congress than anyone. And it's no surprise that this very same Congress spent $1 billion on advertisements to keep the competition, marijuana, illegal. And in fact, following the hurricanes, there was a committee put together called the Republican Study Committee, which was designed to cut $50 billion from the national budget following Hurricane Katrina to account for that. And 95% of the Republicans in Congress decided it was a good idea to cut $600 million over 5 years for anti-marijuana advertisements. And you know what happened? Dennis Hastert, the House Speaker and the guy who really makes sure all the money is coming into all the candidates, he said no. He objected, and they shot it down. And he said, no, we need to spend more money on a needless campaign to mislead the public. And it really just goes to show the hypocrisy that we're willing to allow people to use something so harmful and prohibit them from using something so benign.
So your contention is that we need to regulate marijuana in the same way as alcohol. Now, give me some nuts and bolts of how that can happen.
Well, what we'd like to see is a system in which private individuals and companies would receive a license through the state to grow and sell marijuana. And, you know, just like we do with alcohol, if you want to be a small-time microbrewery, you make a little alcohol. Well, you grow a little marijuana, maybe just sell it a little bit. Or if you wanted to try to make a business out of it, obviously there's a free market. Just like Coors is now, you know, a multi-billion-dollar industry, we would have, larger companies choosing to use marijuana. I will point out that I'm pretty sure it's Philip Morris has the trademark on the terms Panama Red and a couple of the other ones that you've heard in reference to marijuana. And, you know, I don't think that's a surprise that, you know, sooner or later we're going to need companies that are big enough to grow and
sure.
and produce marijuana. And we'd like to see it treated similarly and regulated and controlled rather than just a wild criminal market. And, you know, people who are involved in it now could simply legitimize themselves, and they'd probably have some skills that would be required in another industry. And it would obviously be good for the economy. We would bring in tons of tax revenues. And therefore, those people who are so opposed to taxes, their taxes would stay the same because they wouldn't have to use marijuana, just like people don't have to use tobacco. And
Just have some patience with me. You know, when I get to hire people, and they come in and sit with me and have a show, then we'll be able to do that. Let me take a quick break and see if I can figure out exactly what happened there, and we will be right back.
Rosa Parks died last night at the age of 92. And across this country today, millions of Americans had good reason to feel they had lost a link to another time when ordinary people felt obligated to do extraordinary things.
They always underestimate the numbers, man. Look, I was at the protest yesterday, and I'm in here reading the newspaper now. And what are they saying? Like, the numbers were a quarter of what we saw and counted personally out there.
Well, man, I was just trying to find something on the news about it, you know. And every time you see a camera shot, it's, you know, some way, you know, obfuscated and obscured so it looks like there's a dozen people, you know. And then they stage some stupid counter-protest, and they make it look like there's a bunch of people, and they add 12. I mean, you know, you can't even believe your own damn eyes.
So tell me something, man. You know, wasn't there something, like, in this country called the Fourth Estate? I mean, wasn't there something that our founders envisioned that was supposed to be the check and balance outside of government?
Did you just say Fourth Estate? On what's behind
the high level of yeah.
I think, actually, I heard something about a new show coming up called Fourth Estate.
Really?
Hey, man, check it out. Hold on. I think there's a promo for it right now.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch from All Things Reconsidered, broadcasting from Greensboro, North Carolina, North America, USA. And sitting right next to me,
some 10,000 miles away and 16 hours in the future, coming to you from Sydney, Australia. G'day, my name's John Fox, and we are the Fourth Estate.
What's the Fourth Estate, you ask? Well, the Fourth Estate used to be the check and balance that kept the government from becoming too corrupt, because the Fourth Estate was the press. The Fourth Estate was that entity that was the watchdog over all levels of government. Today we don't have that. Today we have a media that is complicit and is bought and paid for by the government and by the corporations that run it. What we're going to do is bring you a show that embodies the spirit of the Fourth Estate. A show that cuts through the propaganda, cuts through the media noise, and brings you cutting-edge news stories from across the blogosphere.
Not only that, it's not going to be all serious. We're going to have some entertainment news interviews with some of the newest and hottest acts coming out of Australia here, and who knows who I might be able to get in. We've got lined up so far, we have Mr. Ben Lee, and we have a lovely silken voice lady by the name of Jen Clower. What else we got for him, buddy?
Well, I just wanted to say, every time that you listen to the radio, every time that you watch the television, every time that you read your newspaper and you see the complicity of the U.S. media, remember, the Fourth Estate is coming. I'm not ashamed to say exactly what is real, 'cause I'm in a state in the back of my mind. I won't be tempted to face this time. I'll take the heart of the matter, the harder I go. You're scared to look pretty for hell of a show. Tell them some solution, globally go at the loser.
For the latest details, visit fourthestateradio.com.
And that was a promo for a new upcoming show that is going to be coming on I think we decided that it's going to be next week. Am I right?
I do believe I got an echo.
Okay.
But
well,
that's cool. I'll cope.
So okay, well, on the line with me live, 10,000 miles away and 16 hours into the future, I have John Fox. John, how you doing tonight?
How you going, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Tell me something about this brand new show that we just heard a promo about.
Well, we're gonna launch this thing coming next week. I got to take my headphones off while I do this because the delay is getting me. Anyway, what we're going to try and do is fill in the holes in the mainstream media is what we're hoping to do. You know, there once was a Fourth Estate that kind of kept an eye on things. It was our little bit of a check and balance system that, and we could trust what happened, but we can't anymore. Just, you know, we had a fairness doctrine and everything else. So, you know, you and I have spent some time getting to know each other. You had this show. I wanted to do a show, and I think it's going to be a really, really good time, and we'll, you know, pull the pants down on the mainstream media.
Okay, well, you know, I totally think that that's exactly what we're going to try to do. John and I got together, and we've decided that we want to create a new show, and the Fourth Estate, stay tuned. Actually, if you at the end of that last promo, you would have heard something called FourthEstateRadio.com, and guess what? If you go there, you can find out more about what we're doing. And also, John, I believe you had a report on your blog. Is that correct?
I did a little bit of a write-up on 12thHarmonic.com, just kind of telling how we decided to start this thing and that we're going to start this thing pretty soon. I'd like to, before I forget, to give a big shout-out and a thank you to the Screaming Jets, the band whose music is on the back of that. And you can get to them at thescreamingjets.com.au. They got a killer DVD, and if you get it and you watch the backstage section, you can see me running around tearing a guitar apart.
Well, you know, I think it would be worth buying it just for that alone. But
I really think we're gonna have a good time, and we're gonna bring in some music. And from this delay's driving me nuts. Headphones are gone again. I'm really looking forward to hopefully before the first show, I'm gonna get this young lady by the name of Jen Clower. The folks in the Tom Hartman chat room have picked up on her, and hoping to get her and her fiddle player in here to do a little acoustic duo version of a couple of their songs. And Ben Lee, I think the Screaming Jets sometime down the line. And I've got, you know, being the fact that I run around trying to take care of crazy rock and roll bands all the time, which is my other passion, which I hope to bring some of that passion to this new radio show. Cans back on.
All right. Well, you know what? Thanks a lot, John, for stepping in and talking with us about this and giving us a heads up on the Fourth Estate. And, you know, just so everyone who's listening knows, we have another promo that I'm going to be playing in a moment that I haven't even heard yet. So this is going to be kind of a surprise for me, too. You can reach us on that show online at FourthEstateRadio.com. Fourth Estate Radio. God, my brain is just... Okay. FourthEstateRadio.com is the site. And we're going to play another promo right now.
What is the Fourth Estate? The Fourth Estate used to be...
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting. More details just arrived.
And today, what are we force-fed?
Because Fox is where the news is.
You know, in old days, it wasn't about the exclusive. It was about telling the truth. It was about making sure the truth was portrayed in the media, you know, in print and in television and on the radio. And now the news has become a manufactured item. Today news that today's media is complicit. And what we want to do and what we're going to do and what we are doing with the Fourth Estate is to create a place, well, if you will, a safe haven for the truth. We'll be right back.
Fourth Estate Radio. It's again time to hold them accountable.
For the latest details, visit fourthestateradio.com.
Okay, thanks a lot so much for being with us again tonight, John and...
Sorry about the buzz on my end, and I'll sort that out for next time.
All right. And that was John Fox from the 12thharmonic.com, and he's going to be doing a show with me. We're going to be doing a show together. Fantastic. We're going to be doing a show together. It's going to be called The Fourth Estate. So, we've got that to you. And actually now I feel like I want to, you know, talk with an accent. And maybe I will. Maybe I'll just talk with an accent. Real briefly, let's take a quick break again, and we will be right back with more All Things Reconsidered. We're back, All Things Reconsidered, on your radio dial, computer system, whatever you would like to call it. There's a couple things I really wanted to cover before we get off the air tonight. It is 10 minutes before the hour. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered. You can reach us online at allthingsreconsidered.org. Fantastic way to get in touch with us. Come to our website, check it out, you know, leave a message. If you're interested in doing that, we would love to hear from you. One of the things I wanted to really get with this week, and you know, because we saw something this past in the past week that was really quite remarkable, and that was that the Democrats in Congress finally decided to go ahead and act like they had some sense and force the Republicans into a closed-door session to answer why, you know, there was a report on the intelligence that had created the war in Iraq and why this intelligence was flawed. And apparently the Republicans, as usual, Republicans, they do this, stonewalled and did not want to create a report that would be damning to the Bush administration. So instead, you know, what they did was try to stonewall the Democrats, 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 stonewall the Democrats. And as a result, the Democrats finally decided that now here's something worth fighting for. Now, okay, and I understand that that's a fantastic thing, and I think it's excellent that they finally decided to do this. But I want you to know one thing. I am damn disappointed that they chose not to do that for what happened after Katrina. They chose not to do that for the original war in Iraq. They chose not to do that when we were torturing prisoners in Abu Ghraib. They chose not to do that when we were taking people and hiding them in prisons around the world, secret prisons. They chose not to do that. But they decided to fight over the 9/11, or not the 9/11, I'm sorry, over the Iraq War Intelligence Report. You know, one thing out of a thousand freaking things that they chose to get riled up about. Now, is this something that's going to be? Is this a sign of things to come? Was this the shot heard around the world? Well, No, I don't think so. And I'm going to tell you why I don't think so. Because when I'm looking and I'm reading about this new Supreme Court nomination, Alito, this guy, he is, he's worse than Rehnquist, according to everything, all the decisions that he's made. And yet the Democrats are lining up behind him saying, oh, well, we don't think that this is going to be bad enough, you know, for us to filibuster him. Yeah, bull. Okay, and since you have to actually access this stream, and this is not broadcast over the air, no, I'm not going to say it. But you know what? Let me just put it this way: if they don't fight every fight, if they don't raise hell at every turn, if they do not make this living hell on the Republicans, then they are not an opposition party. And that's the way it is. That's the way it works. If you are not in opposition, okay, imagine if I were in opposition to, say, John, who was just on the radio with us. He and I would be arguing, and we would not get along, and there would be a certain amount of friction there because we are in opposition to each other. The word opposition itself creates friction, okay? Following that line of reasoning, we have a Democratic Party in Congress right now. In the words of Alexander Cockburn, it is impossible to link the Democrats with a single courageous stand or even a constructive idea in this year. In October, the party's top strategists, mesmerized by the 21st century's answer to the framers, George Lakoff's childish nostrums, they were wrangling over two possible slogans: Together We Can Do Better, or Together America Can Do Better. And that was the biggest issue that they were dealing with. Meanwhile, 100,000 older Americans lined up in mid-October to file for bankruptcy before the old Wipe the Slate Clean Chapter 7 law expired. Over half of these bankrupts were because of health care. The new bankruptcy law, written by the banks and credit card companies, made it through Congress only with the help of Democratic votes in the Senate, which were duly forthcoming, as they always are. So never let it be said that All Things Reconsidered is in the bed with Democrats. Okay? Never let it be said that All Things Reconsidered doesn't believe, you know, or should I say does believe in partisan hackery. Never let it be said that we are just a mouthpiece for the Democratic Party, because you know what? There's a whole lot of stuff the Democratic Party is doing that I don't agree with and will not agree with. Having said all that, I certainly hope that over the next week we will see something out of the party that will resemble an opposition party in this country, because we don't have it. And I can only hope that if you're listening to this program, that what you will do is call your congressman and raise hell. Hell, call your neighboring congressman. Tell him, you know, hey, look, I've got a Republican. I've got two Republicans in the Senate here in North Carolina. Okay? I mean, you know, call somebody who's a Democrat and say, I need you to act like you've got some courage. Because you know what? Having courage is what is what changes things. It's not sitting back and kowtowing to the special interests. Having courage is what does it. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bruce Birch. You've been listening to All Things Reconsidered. Peter Werby will be up next. I'm going to stream his program, so stick around. Remember, next week, Saturday night at 10 o'clock, right here on this stream, All Things Stream, you will hear the first edition of The Fourth Estate. And as we're going out this evening, I would like to remind you to be good to each other, you know. Be the peace that you want to see in the world. Be the change that you want to see in the world. Because with us, is, you know, never let it be said that a small group of people, or even one person, can't change anything. We lost a lady last week, Rosa, or a couple weeks ago, Rosa Parks, who physically embodied the very belief that one person can change the world. Indeed, perhaps it's the only thing that ever has. You can reach us online at allthingsreconsidered.org. You can reach me by email, allthings@thetruthis.us. You can also, if you're interested in more liberal radio, or progressive radio, I should say, go to thetruthis.us and click on progressive radio links, and that will take you to a 24/7 schedule of progressive radio that is streamed over the internet around the world all week long. I'd like to thank, let's see here, and as we're going out for the evening, I'd like to thank Ben Birch of White Rose Society for archiving my show. I'd also like to thank 12th Harmonic for donating some web logs to give to those who have donated to All Things Reconsidered. So if you really like the show, man, and you want to see us upgrade our equipment and become better and better, you know, you can send us a little green gift there, and perhaps that'll help. We are totally listener-supported, and so if you'd like to do that, please do so. This has been the November the 6th edition of All Things Reconsidered. We certainly hope you've enjoyed it. I know I have. Good night.
Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the Riff Concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the Riff banner on your Windows Media Player.
Yeah, be very calm. 313-298-WRIF. I should be real calm. I should be, that is, because I spent the entire weekend, Friday night, 3 hours, all day Saturday, all day today, at a Tai Chi workshop. Tai Chi, you know that stuff? Real slow, with my headphones up too loud, as usual. That's why I got that feedback. Anyway, Tai Chi is a martial art, formerly.